Yesterday's show about Chris Hedges saying he won't vote for Biden because Biden helped vomit up Trump is pretty popular so far. The debate between Breonna Joy Gray and Noam Chomsky has been shared broadly on social media. Mike Figueredo, the sheepdog, came out predictably for the Chomsky school of thought. Definitely ask Mike if you can see his tax returns. Because he has a broad following, he says he owes it to his followers to be responsible. Meanwhile, our planet is going down the toilet and workers are getting treated like shit, Mike. He says at the end of this clip that he just put out that he feels the need to be responsible. And I say to Mike, you are not responsible. You are not open and honest. You are a tool of the oligarchy. You are endorsing a racist rapist with your vote. You are a scab, pure and simple. If this argument is raging on your Facebook feed about whether you should vote for Biden or vote third party, if you want additional ammo to this latest video, just go on YouTube and type in Chomsky is a coward. And the first hit is Bob Show episode 207, Chomsky is a coward. So feel free to watch that one too if you want more ammo. And by the way, Jimmy Dore is not wrong about Noam Chomsky. And Chris Hedges is not wrong about Noam Chomsky. And I'm not wrong about Noam Chomsky. But look to the entire stable of lefty pundits, and you've got all these assholes saying, oh no, Trump is an existential threat. We have to vote for Biden. And progressive friends don't let progressive friends vote for corporatists. No corporate sock puppets, no matter who. As far as I know, I'm the only one who's calling people scabs when they vote for corporatists, but I hope that catches on. And while we're talking about scabs, let's move our discussion to unions and strikes. Here's a Jacobin article entitled, The Teachers Red for Ed Movement is Far from Dead, by Eric Blank. The byline reads, in 2018, the Red for Ed teacher strike wave exploded, first in West Virginia, then in Oklahoma, Arizona, and beyond. It shook the foundations of public education and teacher unionism in America and may play a key role in fighting COVID-19-induced education austerity in the near future. In late February 2018, teachers and support staff shuttered schools in all 55 counties of West Virginia. Their strike inspired educators across the country and raised hopes that a long-awaited revival of organized labor finally may have arrived. That spring, school employees in Oklahoma, Arizona, and beyond walked out to demand increased education funding and better pay. Confounding all expectations, these actions erupted in Republican-dominated red states with weak labor unions, bans on public sector strikes, and electorates that voted for Donald Trump. The Red for Ed movement soon spread nationwide, with strikes throughout 2019 paralyzing school districts in Democratic cities such as Los Angeles, Oakland, Chicago, and Denver. How has this Red for Ed movement developed over the 2 years since West Virginia? Have the walkouts strengthened educator unions and rank-and-file teacher activism? And to what extent has the movement been able to win its demands and effect broader political changes? One thing's for sure, dear viewers and listeners, you won't see this story front and center on MSDNC or Clinton News Network. The movement continues. Though educator militancy predates 2018, one of the novel impacts of West Virginia was that it immediately set off a wave of similar workplace actions, particularly in Republican-led right-to-work states. Despite bans on public sector strikes and relatively weak labor movements, the spring of 2018 witnessed statewide teacher strikes in Oklahoma and Arizona, as well as one-day walkouts in Kentucky, North Carolina, and Colorado. All in all, over 375,000 education workers engaged in work stoppages in 2018, bringing the total number of strikers that year to 485,000, the largest number since 1986. After the spring 2018 upsurge, it remained an open question whether Red for Ed was an ephemeral explosion or the beginning of a sustained nationwide movement. Strike statistics would seem to indicate the latter. A total of 425,000 workers struck in 2019, with a strong majority, 270,000, again coming from the education sector. And this number does not include the numerous examples of school districts, such as Las Vegas, where unions organized credible strike threats, but management avoided walkouts by granting major last-minute concessions. The fact that the strike upsurge remains largely limited to education, however, is a significant limitation. There is only so far that educators can go in the absence of a broader revitalization of organized labor. Large numbers of workers across the country may be ready to fight, but faced with powerful corporations and a much weaker union movement in the private sector, turning that potential into a reality remains easier said than done. Of the 2019 work stoppages, the most important were certainly January's strike in Los Angeles and October's strike in Chicago. Each were offensive actions to reverse the education policies imposed by corporate Democrats over the past two decades, each foregrounded common good demands on behalf of students as well as the broader community. These common good demands, for example, included an increase in the number of nurses and counselors, as well as smaller class sizes. Ding, ding, ding! Here's an aside, dear listeners and viewers. My classes routinely run 166 people. I don't know if you've ever walked into a classroom with 166 people in it, or into a Zoom session for that matter, but it's not something for the faint of heart. But even if your heart isn't faint, you still have to grade all those quizzes and assignments. If you've known me over the last 25 years or so, you know that smaller class sizes is my soapbox. But I'll hop off now and we'll get back to the story. Importantly, each of these strikes highlighted the interconnection between the fight for public education and racial justice. What set Los Angeles apart from other work stoppages in recent memory was the depth and systematic nature of the organizing drive that made it possible. Upon winning the leadership of United Teachers Los Angeles, UTLA, in 2014, the new elected leadership from the Union Power Caucus proceeded to reorient UTLA toward a years-long process of deep organizing. An increase in membership dues and internal staffing served as the scaffolding for training hundreds of rank-and-file leaders tasked with organizing their school sites and reaching out to parents. Any activist or union interested in systematizing effective organizing methods would do well to study the UTLA strike. In Chicago, whose 2012 teachers' strike was the most important precursor to and inspiration for Red for Ed, a particularly significant development was that the October 2019 work stoppage was not only of teachers, but also school service personnel. Thousands of special education classroom assistants, custodians, bus aides, and security guards organized into Service Employees International Union, SEIU, Local 73, and walked picket lines to fight for living wages and better working conditions. As in West Virginia, the result was a significantly stronger strike, one that made clear to the public that it takes more than teachers to make a school run. As seen in the Los Angeles and Chicago strikes, Red for Ed's center of gravity in 2019 shifted to blue cities and states. In Oakland, a February strike had a similar social justice orientation to Chicago and Los Angeles, though with only 6 months to prepare its campaign, the union's contract wins fell somewhat short of gains won elsewhere. And the strike wave finally reached the East Coast in October, when educators in Dedham, Massachusetts, walked out in an illegal action that consciously challenged the state's ban on public sector strikes. Though it took place in a small district, Dedham's victory was politically significant because it again showed that anti-strike laws, which remain on the books in most parts of the country, can be surmounted through collective action. That's why I like to say, dear viewers and listeners, that there is no illegal strike. If you're organized to the point where you bring the bean counters to their knees, that becomes a legal strike, because they make it legal after the fact. Back to the story. Republican-led states also witnessed important work stoppages in 2019. In February, West Virginia educators organized another victorious statewide strike, which succeeded in stopping the introduction of charter schools. Nashville, Tennessee educators organized wildcat sick-outs in May against budget cuts. On November 14th, educators in Little Rock, Arkansas, organized a one-day strike to stop racial resegregation and to demand democratic local control of their school district. And Indiana teachers followed suit on November 19th in a statewide walkout to demand more funding, better pay, and an end to overtesting. Whereas most of these work stoppages raised social justice issues and were led either by militant union leaders or unruly rank and filers, one of the less reported developments of 2019 has been the spread of strikes narrowly focused on wages and led by relatively moderate union officials. Examples of such actions include the February strike in Denver, the May-June strike in California's New Haven School District, and the November walkout in West Sonoma, California, as well as numerous walkouts in smaller school districts across the country. Though the results of these work stoppages were mixed, it is a sign of the times that even some old school union leaderships have felt the pressure to take action. So if you're in a union like mine with old school leadership, then you can take heart from this too. We can push these old school union leaders around a little bit. Organizational growth. Have the educator strikes since 2018 resulted in a quantitative and qualitative revitalization of organized labor? One important criterion for assessing this question is growth in union membership. From February 2018 through February 2019, i.e., in the year following West Virginia's walkout, the American Federation of Teachers grew by 100,000 members. And despite the passage of the anti-union Janus Supreme Court decision in the summer of 2018, the National Education Association similarly saw an uptick in membership. To quote Education Week journalist Madeline Will, "The groundswell of teacher activism across the country over the past year might have attracted more members." I have to say to anybody watching this video, we need to get this news out. We need to encourage people to look at what the teachers are doing and follow them into battle. Data from the specific unions that coordinated statewide strikes confirm a hypothetical link between strike militancy and union revitalization, though with an important caveat. The available evidence suggests that union membership grew in the wake of successful union-led strikes. Ineffectual strikes, in contrast, led to a decrease in dues payers. Unfortunately, the absence of membership data from the district-wide unions precludes incorporating their experience into our analysis. As such, we rely on the membership numbers for the statewide unions. And this is me talking. And again, that shows you that you have to win the strike in order for it to become legal after the fact. And that's why you have to be damn sure that you're very well organized in advance. Arizona and West Virginia were the two states in the spring of 2018 where unions helped lead what educators generally felt to be victorious strikes. In West Virginia, the push for a work stoppage forced the state to withdraw its controversial rate hikes to the public employee health insurance plan. Then, after almost 2 weeks of shuttered schools in late February and early March, West Virginia's legislature caved to the strikers and granted a 5% raise to all public employees, not only educators. Fuck yes. In Arizona, the April to May strike forced the legislature to grant teachers an average 20% pay raise. A remarkable outcome given that legislators had until this point refused to consider anything more than a 1% raise. The work stoppage also successfully pressured the legislature to rescind its new proposed tax cuts and its efforts to take an anti-privatization referendum off the November 2018 ballot. In contrast, Oklahoma's April walkout wrested no gains from the state government. A 15% pay increase had been approved by the legislature on the eve of the strike, but the walkout itself, unlike in Arizona and West Virginia, was unable to force any more concessions. Perhaps most damaging, the Oklahoma Education Association controversially called off the walkout before most teachers were ready to return to work, resulting in widespread denunciations of the union from rank-and-file educators. That's what happens when you have weak, sellout assholes as union leaders. Following the actions in West Virginia and Arizona, union membership grew by the thousands. The affiliate of the NEA in Arizona experienced a 10.3% increase in members. And in West Virginia, the NEA affiliate grew by 3.8%, and the American Federation of Teachers grew by 4.6%. Since AFT locals are disproportionately clustered in large cities on the coasts and the Midwest, West Virginia was the only state during the spring 2018 upsurge in which there existed a significant AFT affiliate. Oklahoma presented a different picture. Given the disappointing outcome of the strike and the union's controversial role, one should not be surprised that the OEA's membership dropped by 1.7%. In short, the spring 2018 upsurge suggests that while there is no automatic link between strikes and increased union membership, successful strikes do tend to quantitatively strengthen organized labor. As one Arizona teacher argued on a Facebook thread concerning the lessons of the strike, "The word union does not scare me anymore. I joined the Arizona Education Association and plan on continuing to fight for what is right for educators and students. I feel the most empowered I have ever felt as an educator and now do believe that change is possible." Membership increases tell only part of the labor revitalization story, for there were many members who did not become active participants in the union until these work stoppages. Tanya Aselson's experience in Ravenswood, West Virginia was illustrative. "I went from not wanting to be a building rep, to being aggravated and involved, to now becoming president for the AFT in our county. The strike forced me to find leadership skills within myself. We've all really grown in the last couple of months. It makes us proud." Another significant organizational development since 2018 has been the growth and increased influence of rank-and-file reform efforts across the country, which promised to sustain the educator upsurge over the years to come. Though teachers' unions have generally become more assertive since 2018, this has not overcome tensions between risk-averse officials and more combative activists oriented to workplace militancy and social justice issues. Indeed, the post-West Virginia upsurge has led to the growth and spread of reform caucuses hoping to replicate the Democratic organizing methods, anti-racist focus, and strike-oriented strategies promoted by reform union leaderships in Chicago, Los Angeles, and beyond. Many of these reform groups have coalesced around the United Caucuses of Rank-and-File Educators, UCOR, including the new West Virginia United Caucus led by many of the organizers who helped initiate the 2018 strike. And these forces experienced some notable successes this past year with the election of rank-and-file reformers to union leadership in Baltimore, Denver, and Nashville. Yet, as seen in the January 2020 defeat of a well-organized electoral challenge waged by the Caucus of Working Educators in Philadelphia, incumbent leaderships generally remain in the driver's seat. Shaping the political narrative. Red for Ed has also brought about important changes in the political arena. Perhaps the movement's most important win has been to change public perceptions of the crisis facing education. Only a few years ago, the mainstream media, as well as leading Democrats and Republicans, routinely scapegoated educators and championed a billionaire-backed education reform agenda focused on privatization, high-stakes testing, and union busting. The strike upsurge has succeeded in pushing the national and statewide political conversation in a new direction. Low wages for teachers and the systematic underfunding of schools are now the most commonly cited explanations for public education's travails. To cite one example, Time magazine went from publishing laudatory cover stories about privatization advocates like Michelle Rhee to running a September 2018 cover story titled, "I have a master's degree, 16 years of experience, work two extra jobs, and donate blood plasma to pay the bills. I am a teacher in America." Polls show that a strong majority of the population supports the education strikes, believes that teacher salaries are too low, and would support teachers locally if they decided to strike. Scholars have also documented how the walkouts have directly impacted public opinion in affected regions. An original survey conducted by Columbia University sociologists in the six states that experienced walkouts in 2018 found that the strikes had large, direct, and positive effects on mass attitudes, even nearly a year after the strikes originally occurred. Noting that the impact upon parents was particularly pronounced for conservatives, Republicans, and those without personal experience with unions, the study concludes that not only did the teacher strikes appear to succeed in establishing a greater sense of common fate between parents and the teachers, but the strikes also increased individuals' own interest in labor action, though not necessarily through traditional unions, suggesting a potential multiplier effect that could inspire greater labor mobilization, especially strikes. And dear viewers and listeners, let's call these strikes what they are. In red states especially, these are wildcat strikes. These are illegal strikes. So if teachers can do an illegal strike, anyone can do an illegal strike. The whole fucking country can do an illegal strike. And we can bring these motherfucking plutocrats to their knees. Policy changes. In terms of policy concessions and changes at work, the gains have been more uneven. As noted earlier, some of the strikes failed to win any concessions. This was less common in 2018, when state legislators were generally caught off guard by the strikes. By 2019, however, they were clearly better prepared. In June 2019, the West Virginia legislature took advantage of the end of the school year to ram through the same charter legislation that striking educators had defeated just a few months earlier. Arizona's movement still has not recovered from the blow delivered by the right-wing state Supreme Court's decision to unilaterally remove a progressive funding initiative from the ballot. And in New Haven, California, educators returned to school after 14 days of striking without wresting any major concessions from the district. That said, most strikes since 2018 have won significant pay raises for educators and, as such, have been experienced as at least partial victories. These wage gains have eased material survival for thousands of teachers and simultaneously serve to confirm that teachers deserve respect in the community and dignity at work. Gains beyond pay raises have been more limited. While the Los Angeles and Chicago strikes were able to win some common good demands, these broader victories were the exception rather than the rule. Nor have any of the strikes reversed systematic school underfunding, particularly in communities of color, or the draconian test-driven accountability measures that remain the norm across the country. If anything, the rapidly raised expectations generated by strike participation have put into sharper relief the distance between educator aspirations and day-to-day working conditions. Though this gap fuels ongoing mobilization campaigns, it has also led to considerable individual demoralization and collective frustration beyond educator-activist milieus. There is also only so much that one walkout can do to turn around decades of public school neglect, particularly when limited to a single district. Even the most powerful of the strikes since 2018 were not able to win all their demands. The mixed results we have seen suggest that strikes, while likely necessary for the revival of labor and the transformation of public education, are not sufficient on their own to wrest the structural reforms proposed by educators and their unions. Without political solutions like ballot initiatives to tax the rich, and without electing firmly pro-education representatives to office, it is hard to imagine how Red for Ed will be able to ultimately reach its ambitious goals. For a glimpse at how the energy of workplace action can potentially feed into changes in political office, consider the case of Kentucky, where a teacher-led political insurgency took down Republican Governor Matt Bevin. In response to the governor's push for austerity, Kentucky educators walked out by the tens of thousands in the spring of 2018 to save their pensions and fund public education. Over the following 18 months, they formed the backbone of a won't-be-bullied-by-Bevin election crusade that was buoyed by $1.2 million in teacher union donations. Faced with this grassroots upsurge, even Donald Trump's last-minute campaign rally was not enough to save Bevin, who lost in November 2019 by 5,000 votes to Andy Beshear, a mainstream Democrat who nevertheless ran on a strong pro-public education platform. On election night, Bashir acknowledged the decisive role of unionized school workers. To our educators, your courage to stand up and fight against all the bullying and name-calling helped galvanize our entire state. It remains to be seen whether the Red for Ed movement can find the means in other states and on a national level to bring about a major reprioritization of public education. With wind in their sails, unions are increasingly pointing their fingers at the billionaires and corporations who many hold responsible for undermining the school system. When asked about how to refund public education, Chicago Teachers Union Vice President Stacey Davis Gates put it well. Where will the money come from? Rich people. One important test is looming in California, where a coalition of unions have spearheaded a statewide coalition to pass a progressive taxation initiative in the November 2020 elections that would raise $1.3 billion for schools and public services by reforming Proposition 13, a landmark anti-tax initiative passed in 1978. This is me talking. Prop 13 in California and ballot measure 5 in Oregon is why I had to move away from the West Coast to the East Coast to continue to be a music teacher. Music teaching jobs took a major hit in the West after those two initiatives. Back to the story. On a national level, teachers were the number one funders of the Bernie Sanders campaign. In large measure, this stemmed from Sanders' active support for the school strikes and his adoption of their core demands. Some of the unions that led work stoppages in 2019, including UTLA and the Oakland Education Association, also endorsed Sanders, breaking with the labor movement's long-standing attachment to the Democratic Party establishment. So this is me again. When your motherfucking labor union leaders in education start to support people like Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton, it's time to roast those assholes. Back to the story. Most other progressive educator unions, however, remain paralyzed by divisions between supporters of Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, a faux-gressive if you've ever seen one. A wolf in cheap clothing. Elizabeth, I don't really believe in universal health care, Warren. Eventually, both the NEA and AFT national leaderships endorsed Joe Biden. So if you're watching this and you're in one of those unions, you need to do something. And my union is just as bad, so we all need to do something. Though Biden presided over years of austerity, privatization, and high-stakes testing as part of the Obama administration, it is a testament to the strength of Red for Ed and the changing political tides that Biden's campaign has, at least rhetorically, heavy emphasis on rhetorically, significantly distanced itself from those anti-educator policies. But we know better. We know you, Joe. We know you're an asshole. We know you don't give an actual fuck about teachers or any other workers. Whether Biden will stick to his campaign promises if elected will very likely depend on the extent to which the movement can pressure him through strikes, protests, and community organizing. Looking ahead, what comes next? The already challenging task of predicting future political developments has been made much more difficult by the unexpected eruption of the coronavirus crisis, which has quickly upended schools as well as protest activities. In March, a strike in St. Paul was cut short for health safety reasons. In New York City, rank-and-file educators led by the movement of Rank-and-File Educators Caucus forced the mayor to close public schools, a step soon after followed by districts across the country. Right now, school reopenings across the country have been uneven, some remaining shuttered in response to teacher protests in cities like Chicago and Los Angeles, while many others have reopened only to immediately see COVID-19 spikes. Teachers and students throughout the country continue to be exposed to unsafe and unhealthy working and learning conditions, particularly those whose unions did not lead a strong pushback to their district's reopening plans. A virus-induced funding crunch for local and state governments could lead to an even more severe reprise of the bipartisan austerity, privatization, and union busting that prevailed after the 2008 recession. But there is at least one big difference from the last economic crisis. A robust educators movement now exists and is ready to resist any such attacks. As such, the future of America's public schools will remain tied to the Red for Ed movement for the foreseeable future.